This is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Hey guys, welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast. And I'm sure if you worked in the construction industry for any length of time, you've been screwed once or more than once. And the whole point of this podcast is to prevent that from happening. The things that I've seen in working in daily life from the legal side and from the practical side to stop that from happening. There's a bunch of free resources that go into how to do this on the subcontract and what not to sign there on subcontractorinstitute.com. And then the book, Quit Getting Screwed, is available on Amazon. Okay, so today we're going to talk about all things OSHA. What it is, how it works, violations, you know, from a basic perspective so that everybody gets a general understanding. Obviously, if we have more specific questions later on, we can answer those as well. And today we have our OSHA expert with us, Ms. Jonelle Oldacre. She is a senior associate at the Cromings Law Firm. Good morning, Ms. Jonelle. How are you?
Good morning, Carolyn. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So let's take a minute. Tell us who you are, where you came from, and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, so sure. I spent the majority of my life in Oklahoma and California. My parents, they took advantage of that housing boom in the 90s, so they flipped a lot of houses out there. My dad actually had construction experience, so my mom and dad did most of the work themselves, which was great. Let's see, after high school, I went to the University of Oklahoma for undergrad, and that's where I met my wonderful husband, Brian. And after graduation, we moved back to California and got married, and I started at Santa Clara University School of Law. Graduated and licensed to practice in California, and then we moved to Texas and got licensed here. And we've been here for about 10 years now and have two awesome boys. The bulk of my legal experience, though, has been related primarily to property law and in one way or the other. And I started with eminent domain and now construction law for like the past 5 years. It's been really great, and I hope to stay in this area for, you know, the rest of my career, actually. I really enjoy it.
So what do you find intriguing about construction law?
Well, I feel like for the bulk, it's mostly contract law, right? Which is really easy to kind of understand. And every situation, although it might be a little bit different, when it comes down to it, it's all, you know, dependent on a contract. And I just like being in a position where I have a potential client come in with their situation and having enough experience to know exactly what's going on and what the proper steps are to do next. It's really great to kind of have a niche, you know. So I just really enjoy being able to drill down in one particular area.
Awesome. Okay, so today we're going to talk about OSHA. Now, you know, I never really had a lot of OSHA experience, and so we're going to take this from a very basic point of view. What is OSHA and how does it work and what does it mean? Just big picture.
Okay. Yeah, right. So OSHA, it stands for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Okay. It's a federal agency that falls within the Department of Labor. OSHA was created by the Occupational Safety and Health Act in 1970. And it's often referred to as the Act or the OSHA Act, just for short. The act is intended to assure safe and helpful working conditions in American workplaces. It requires employers to comply with safety and health standards and to maintain workplaces that are essentially free from recognized hazards. It's got an amazing purpose. It's there to protect American workers. And actually, the American worker individually is required to apply with the OSHA standards. However, there's no actual authority to sanction individuals under the OSHA Act, so it's ultimately up to the employer to make sure their employees follow it.
Gotcha. So OSHA is for more than just construction sites?
Yeah, it's pretty much affects everyone, right? As long as you have, you know, a certain number of employees and there's different industries that come within OSHA's jurisdiction, from a car dealership to a farm, it affects everyone.
Gotcha. So, and how I hear about OSHA mostly is somebody gets an OSHA violation. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean?
Right.
How do you take care of that?
Okay, so OSHA enforces its safety and health standards through the inspection of workplaces by what they call OSHA compliance officers. Okay, and as a general rule, inspections are conducted during regular working hours and they're completely unannounced. You have no heads up that a compliance officer is going to come to a project site or your workplace and conduct an inspection. Now, an employer has the right to require that the compliance officer obtains an inspection warrant or a search warrant. It's very similar to criminal law. However, in certain situations, you might not want to do that. It kind of puts you on the wrong foot with the compliance officer. But if the compliance officer finds violations of the OSHA Act, he or she will issue written citations and propose penalties at that point. So an employer can contest the citation and the penalty. There's a negotiation process that takes place. Of course, you should have an attorney at your side to kind of walk you through that process and see what kind of deal you can get. And then if a deal is not, you know, made, then it goes up to the next step, which is the Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission, which is supposed to be an independent agency that hears contested violations.
So who actually gets the violation? Is it the individual worker, the owner? Mm-hmm. Who is it?
Right. It's the employer. It's ultimately up to the employer to make sure all the individual workers are complying with OSHA standards. So that's why, you know, there's such an incentive and urgency for every employer to make sure that their employees are trained properly and complying with all the standards.
And so what is like the typical fine or what is the typical amount? Is it easier just to pay it?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what it normally is.
Yeah, sometimes. And it's all negotiable, right? So you might get a fine for $3,500. And then, of course, you can schedule a meeting with the compliance officer, offer up evidence as to why you feel that particular amount is excessive, and get it, you know, ratcheted down a bit. So it's all negotiable. And in some situations, it might be more beneficial just to pay the fine because, you know, you can get yourself in a lot of, you know, huge headache trying to fight something that ultimately is not that much in the long run.
Okay, so is there more penalties for someone who's already got an OSHA violation? Do they keep a record of how many times you get OSHA violations?
Yes, yes. If you are a repeat offender, of course, the schedule of fees, they will increase depending on how often that you find yourself with violations and citations.
And do you think they're more likely to reinspect somebody that already has one OSHA violation?
Yes, of course. And in addition, you might find a compliance officer at your project site because they just happen to be driving by and spotted some scaffolding that they feel like might be, you know, not up to standard. So, and then of course, individuals within the company can report, and members of the community as well, if they think a situation is unsafe, can report companies to OSHA as well.
What would happen if you just ignored an OSHA violation?
Well, that's something you don't want to do. You would be in some serious trouble eventually if they have the power to shut down a project, if it's just not meeting standard and you're just completely ignoring their requirements. So, yes, I definitely don't recommend that.
Okay, so you go through this proceeding, they issue a fine, you go to this independent review board. What if you disagree with what the review board? Are you stuck mm-hmm. with what they say, or can you appeal that decision?
Yes, there is an appeal process that you can go through. They have, you know, the same type of process and streamline that we are used to in litigation. So thankfully you can appeal if you feel it's necessary.
And while this process is going on, can you keep working and keep going to work and run your business?
That I'm not actually sure of, whether or not you can continue to run your business. I think it depends on the severity of the actual violation we're talking about there, but I'm not entirely sure.
Now, if there's an accident on a project site, is OSHA automatically called out?
It depends, right? So we're talking about, depending on how severe the injury or the accident is, there's a reporting process that you have to follow, and you're actually the one that's supposed to report the incident.
Gotcha. So any kind of incident, or is there a severity limit on that?
There is. Like, for instance, just an example, if someone is hospitalized and they required more than basic first aid treatment, you have to report that incident as well. If we're talking about a situation where someone has been hurt or they're sick at the job and they're not hospitalized, in that situation, you're okay. And then there's also an analysis you have to go through to determine whether or not the particular injury was work-related. But of course, it's always best to kind of err on the side of caution if you feel like the injury was actually because of their scope of work.
And what could potentially happen if you didn't file the required paperwork?
Mm-hmm. Well, then it goes back to the actual citation or violation for failure to report at that point.
Gotcha. Okay, so I know I've heard, what type of OSHA training is normally required for people on a construction site?
Mm-hmm. So there is a 10-hour OSHA training course. It's geared more towards general workers who would be like under the direct supervision of supervisors. They also have a 30-hour course that is geared towards supervisors themselves, those individuals that are actually directing the workers. So that would be your minimum. Now, when it comes to more specific types of work, such as fall protection, scaffolding training, OSHA provides more detailed training guidelines. And per OSHA, all employees who work on a scaffold, for example, they must be trained by a person qualified to recognize the hazards associated with that type of use, that type of work, and understand the procedures to control and minimize those hazards. Now, OSHA doesn't really specify who is a qualified person. It's very vague. They just have the curriculum that has to be studied within that particular program.
So what happens if there's somebody on the project site that doesn't have the training?
Well, then you're at risk, right? Because if that individual is not trained properly and they are injured or they cause the injury of someone else, then now you have an issue with OSHA at that point. So depending on the type of work that you're doing, you're going to want to make sure that the person that you're hiring knows what they're doing, because ultimately it's going to fall on you, the employer, if they make a mistake and cause an injury.
And so would the damages be worse if they hadn't gone through the OSHA training, or would the liability be larger potentially?
Right. Absolutely. Especially when on the civil litigation side, when you're talking about negligence and gross negligence, you know, and hiring someone that absolutely did not know what they were doing and caused injury, your legal exposure is going to grow exponentially if they're not trained properly.
Gotcha. And OSHA is one of the ways to prove if they haven't gone through that, that they haven't been trained properly.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay. And so why, in your opinion, do you think it's important for contractors to have their own safety plan?
Mm-hmm. So I think a written safety plan is crucial, firstly, for helping to prevent workplace injuries in the first place, right? If you have a safety plan, you know, you're making sure your workers are reading it and they're signing off saying that they have read it and they acknowledge the procedures, that's just good to make sure that they're doing things properly. But also for helping you deal with the inspections. If you can show a compliance officer that pops up at your workplace a safety plan that was signed by the worker that was involved in an accident, for instance, and it contains safety procedures that would have prevented the accident if they were followed properly, it helps to show that you as an employer did your due diligence to maintain a safe working environment, and your safety plan will be considered when determining whether a citation will be issued and the amount of the penalty. If you can point to a situation and say, listen, we took all the steps necessary to prevent this, and this was just a rogue individual who did not follow the procedure, you're going to be in a much better situation with the safety inspector.
Gotcha. So it's a good thing to have, even if it's not required by your contract.
Right. Absolutely.
But if you sign a subcontract, most of those require you to have a safety plan, right?
They will either require you to have a safety plan or require you to make sure that you're following OSHA and that your workers are properly trained.
And I know I didn't throw this in here, but I'm just kind of curious if you know, what about drug testing? Is that required or is that a good idea to do?
Right. So I'm not sure if it's exactly required by OSHA to have some sort of drug testing program. I haven't run across that, but I would say it's definitely a good idea, especially if you can point to that, if there's any kind of issue with a worker who may have been under the influence, you can make it clear that that was absolutely, you know, against policy.
And that's the other question, I guess. If there's an on-the-job injury, do they take drug tests?
Well, that would be up to the employer themselves. I'm not sure OSHA actually requires that the worker submits to drug testing. I don't think they move quick enough to do that, but that's something I can definitely look into. That's very interesting.
Gotcha. And so what other tips can you give companies out there to help them navigate this whole OSHA issue and other helpful insights?
Sure. So I think it's important for employers to know that if a compliance officer comes to the workplace, just like in criminal law where it has like the anything that they can see while they're on the property, they can, even if they're on the property for something completely unrelated, if they happen to see something else that's a violation, that can get you in trouble. So when you are walking a compliance officer through your facility, you know, the shortest route you can think of, make sure that, you know, everything is shipshape and make sure that there's no blatant violations that they can spot on the way to investigating their primary issue. That's very important. Also, try to be cooperative. I know it's a very frustrating situation to be in, but try to be polite. It really does go a long way to working out a deal with OSHA.
Well, good. Is there any other last tips that you want to give out there? And how can people find you if they needed help with OSHA?
Yeah. If you have any kind of OSHA-related issue or any kind of construction issues at all, feel free to give me a call, send me an email. We can make sure to provide my email address at the end of the podcast. I'll be happy to help out. But don't try to do it on your own. It's way too complicated. You're going to want a competent attorney by your side kind of guiding you through the process. It's crucial.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that awesome insight. And we'll put Jonelle's contact information in the show notes so that you have it there. But thanks again for joining us today, guys. And we'll look forward to some more episodes on how to quit getting screwed. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Tune in 2 weeks from now for a new episode. Thank you.